Good evening. Well, this evening we've got the third in an occasional series in which we've been invited to speak about our favourite psalms. How would you pick just one? There are, after all, 150 to choose from, written by a variety of authors. David wrote 73 of them, 51 are anonymous, and the remainder ascribed to different individuals. And they were written anywhere between 1440 BC and 586 BC. And they express a wide range of human emotions, such as joy and anger, peacefulness and frustration, despair and happiness and anxiety. And written in a poetic style, they're essentially a collection of hymns and prayers that touch every emotion of the human soul. However you are feeling, you will find a psalm to express that mood and draw you closer to God. And I just find it quite extraordinary that words written up to 3,500 years ago are startlingly relevant today. So why did I pick Psalm 27? Well, one of the resources that I use in my quiet time is Celtic Daily Prayer. Based on the spirituality of the Celtic saints in the Northumbrian community, it provides a liturgy for morning prayer that has three Bible readings, prayers and meditations for every day of the year. If you buy both volumes, there's enough material for a four-year cycle. And the morning prayer liturgy begins with these words. One thing I have asked of the Lord, this is what I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord and to seek him in his temple. Words taken from Psalm 27, of course. Now, my husband and I are fortunate enough to have a camper van, and there's nothing we like more than to escape in it for a few days, as we did 4 weeks ago. Now, lovely though the camper van is, storage is limited. So rather than take my Bible and Celtic Daily Prayer, which would have taken up too much room, I picked up just one smaller volume to take away with me, and it was Psalms for Everyone by John Goldingay. It has readings and reflections all in one, and so it was one day that I sat down to read his thoughts on Psalm 27. And his reflection was entitled One Thing. And it really spoke to me that morning, and I decided then that I'd share it with you tonight. And as I prepared this, I was trying to think of a time in my life when I've had to choose just one thing. And this sad, poignant memory came flooding back from my childhood. You may need your tissues in a minute. I was no more than five or so, and I went to a Christmas party that was run by the firm my father worked for. We'd had the entertainment and the games and the food, and then right at the end of the evening, we were ushered into the hall next door, where on the stage there was this tiered display of toys, all unwrapped, and we were able to go up one by one and choose a toy. Well, my eyes immediately fell on the most beautiful doll I'd ever seen. I only had one doll at home. I've still got her. She's called Polly. She was a present, apparently, for my first birthday, but she's entirely made out of moulded rubber. This was a proper doll with movable arms and legs. She had the most beautiful clothes on, ringlets down her either side of her face, and a really pretty face. And I just fell in love with her at once. So one by one, the children began to go up, and my eyes were focused on this doll, hoping that no one would pick her before it was my turn. And I couldn't believe my luck when it was my turn and she was still there. Now, there was a man on the stage who was asking us what we wanted and then passing the gifts to us. "So what would you like?" he said to me. Now, I didn't say, "Could I have that doll, please?" I just pointed and said, "That, please." And he misunderstood the direction in which I was pointing. and instead of picking up the doll, picked up a small plastic guitar that was sat next to her. Now, I was much too timid, much too shy, and much too embarrassed to correct him. And I just said, yes, please, and took the plastic guitar home instead. I was so upset. It still hurts me now to think about it. But focusing on one thing can be difficult. We live in a world where multitasking is the norm. Wherever we go, there are multiple things vying for our attention. I can sit down at home to do some work, and I'll get distracted by the washing that either needs hanging out or bringing in, by wondering what I'm going to cook for dinner that night, by my husband wanting help with something he's doing, by an email I need to send. So I'll click on my inbox and I'll send it, and then I'll get diverted into reading all the things that have come in the meantime. Before I know it, half an hour's passed and I haven't started what I sat down to do. As I said, focus is something we can find difficult. Choosing to ignore distractions and focus on the one thing that's most important at that time. And it's ironic, but sadly true, that immediately after typing that sentence the other morning, I noticed on my screen a little message came up that an email had come in from Glyn. So what did I do? I opened it up, I read it, I replied to it, and then I had to reread this paragraph to get an idea of what my train of thought was. So much for my focus. One thing I have asked of the Lord. Asking for one thing can be difficult. And focus in today's world is made particularly difficult here in the affluent West, where we have such a huge range of choice. Take last Sunday, for example. I went out with a meal with my sister and a friend of hers. What are we going to order from the menu? Are we having a starter or just a main course? What about a pudding and the drinks? Are we going to have a cocktail, wine or soft drinks? The main course ordered meat dishes, fish dishes, pasta dishes, pizza dishes. Which to choose? And if we ordered a fish for the main course, then that ruled out calamari for the starter. And similarly, bread and hummus for the starter, followed by a pizza, would have been too rich in carbs. Such decisions. We sent the waitress away once because we took so long to decide. One thing I have asked of the Lord. Prioritizing one thing above all else makes other choices easier. We ask a great many things of God, of ourselves, of others, and of life. But really, there is only one thing that is needed. And to acquire everything else but miss out on that one thing would be tragic. To the rich young man who was not only successful but diligently religious, Jesus said, "You still lack one thing." Martha busied herself preparing a multi-course feast for Jesus and all his friends. But he said, only one thing is needed, and he didn't mean one dish. Jesus spoke of the merchant who sold all he had to purchase one fantastic pearl. And Paul, in his letter to the Philippians, writes, but one thing I do. Forgetting what is behind and straining towards what is ahead, I press onwards towards the goal, to win for the prize for which God has called me heavenwards in Christ Jesus. Society tells us to keep on acquiring the latest fads, the latest iPhone, the latest iPad, the new trainers, the new kitchen, and it's got to have an island with a loft extension, a bigger house, a bigger car, and so it carries on. But at what expense? What if we could focus and ask for just one thing? And of course, what you ask for tells a lot about who you are. Sometimes we get it right and ask for the right things, Sometimes we don't. Sometimes we ask for things we can't have. I'm reminded of an occasion when my son, who would have been about 6 at the time, came up to me one day and he said, "Mummy, can I have another sister? But this time," he said, "I'd like a big one." The one thing he asked for revealed his innocence. Or take James and John, the sons of Zebedee, in Mark 10. They approach Jesus and ask him, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask." "What do you want me to do?" he asked. And they replied, "Let one of us sit on your right and the other on your left in glory." The one thing they ask for reveals their pride and their ambition. But King Solomon in 1 Kings 3 gets it right when God asks him, "Ask for one thing and I will give it to you." Solomon answered, "Give your servant a discerning heart to govern your people and to distinguish between right and wrong." Though he too, of course, went on to make many unwise choices in his life. What we ask for reveals a lot about who we are and what we value most. It reveals a lot about what our priorities are. And Jesus speaks about this in the Sermon on the Mount, as he says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." The psalmist tells us only one thing is needed. Only one thing should have priority in our lives. One thing is enough, and that is to dwell in the house of the Lord. Now, he doesn't mean, of course, that he wants to move in the temple and live there. Only the high priest could enter the Holy of Holies, and even then only once a year. He's speaking about living in God's presence every moment of every day, putting God first. And that's why these verses open the morning prayer liturgy in Celtic Daily Prayer. It's about being aware of God first thing every morning and have him walk with us, beside us, wherever we go, into our days, not just here on a Sunday morning for a couple of hours or a Sunday evening for a couple of hours. He's talking about putting our relationship with God first. And a few verses on from that last verse in Matthew 6, Jesus tells his hearers, "Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness." That's where our focus should be. That's where our priority should be and where our passion should be. Now, I'm sure many of you, if not all of you, feel as I do about this church. I am still so thankful that God brought me here. We sang a song a moment ago, and the chorus has the line in it, "I will worship you here." The first time I visited this church in January 2016, we sang that song. I came back in April and we sang that song. And that was all the confirmation I needed that this was the place I was meant to be. When I come into the presence of God here, it's a place where I don't have to pretend, where I can't pretend. It's an oasis of comfort and security, a place where I can be myself and find rest. And when I speak about the church, I'm not talking about this building, beautiful though it is. I'm talking about you guys, you people. You make up the church, not bricks and mortar. You are what makes this such a special place. Right now, of course, many of us are really busy. We've taken on extra responsibilities during the interregnum. And as the In Focus panel reveals, there is still an urgent need for more people to step up and help. And I'd really ask you to consider that prayerfully and help if you can. But busy though we are, if I come into this place feeling frazzled and fine by the way, stands for fragile, insecure, neurotic, and emotional, I leave feeling refreshed. David wants us to dwell in the house of the Lord, and his purpose in this is that we might gaze on the beauty of the Lord and seek him in his temple. This is talking about worship and relationship. It's in coming together in worship that we hear the word of God powerfully spoken and sung. We are so blessed in this church to have such a talented team of musicians to lead us week by week. It's in coming together in worship that we can receive God's grace afresh in our lives through prayer and through the bread and wine. It's in coming together in worship that we can encourage one another to love and to be faithful. And seeking him in his temple is about seeking God's guidance in all things, taking our questions to God in prayer, listening to the promptings of his Spirit, reading our Bibles and applying them to our daily lives, seeking out the advice of other Christians we can trust. But here's the thing, we don't only have to rely on coming here together to find this refreshment. The presence of God living with us is something we can know wherever we are. We can dwell in the presence of God in our homes, in our workplaces, on the platform of Embankment Tube Station at 6 o'clock in the evening where every train comes through, crammed to the doors, in the supermarket, in the Albert. This should be for us, as it was for David, a lifelong quest. And so, as important as corporate prayer and worship are, we need each one of us to develop the discipline of spending time alone with God each day, asking him to speak to you as you read the Bible and reflect on it and as you pray. We need to make this a priority, to be deliberate about it. Because the thing is, the more we lean on God, the more we'll experience his goodness, his love, and his faithfulness, and that will encourage us to keep on leaning on him. It's likely that when David wrote this, he was nowhere near the temple. Some suggest that he was fleeing from his son Absalom, who'd rebelled against him. And the section from verses 7 to 12 suggests that he was in considerable difficulty and danger as he asks, "Hear my voice, don't hide from me, don't turn me away, don't reject me, don't hand me over." But as he says this psalm, as he says these words, you get the feeling that David isn't saying it for the first time. For him, this is a tried and tested method. He has prayed like this before, and he can trust on the basis of his past experiences that God will bring him through. And our trust and dependence in God can also grow if we remember his faithfulness to us in the past, if we hear other people's testimonies of how God has acted in their lives. And memorizing verses from the Bible is another powerful way of bringing ourselves into God's presence. And the first verse of this psalm is, you couldn't find a better place to start. "The Lord is my light and salvation. Whom shall I fear?" If you're facing a difficult situation, just to remember those words will help you enormously. Some of you may know Ernie Daly. He used to come to the 10:30 service. He used to sit on my right over there at the back, just in front of that pillar. He is very weak indeed at the moment in Teddington Memorial Hospital. And I used to work with one of his daughter-in-laws. And she remarked to me how moved she was that even in his weakened state, lying there with his eyes closed, he was able to recite all the words of Psalm 23. He had no idea, but he was witnessing to her at that time. And the slides are nothing if not realistic. They make it clear that at times life can be deadly and dangerous. But our experiences of God in the past can be brought back to mind when we experience anything that's difficult or frightening. And we see David doing that in this psalm. As he recalls in verse 1 that the Lord is his light and his salvation and the stronghold of his life. In verse 3, he testifies that he will not fear and that with God he can be confident. In verse 5, he remembers that God will keep him safe and will hide him in the shelter of his tabernacle. I don't know if any of you were at the 10:30 this morning, but we had Mike Simpson speaking to us from FRRME, and he was witnessing about some of the Christians who've been displaced in northern Iraq and into the Jordan. And he said that the lives of these people have just been awful. They've been through catastrophe after catastrophe after catastrophe. And yet the one thing they keep saying is God never forgets us. God never forgets us. And that's quite remarkable. I just wanted to pause for a moment and consider this image of the Lord as his light. Because in those days, there were only two sources of light. There was the sun, which gave light and warmth by day, and a lamp. And as in Psalm 119, verse 105, where we read, "Your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path." It's a lamp David's talking about here. And it would have been similar to this one. We were given these on a trip to a recreation of a first century village in Nazareth about 3 years ago. Everyone who goes there is given one of these as they leave. It's made of clay. It would have been filled with oil and has just one small wick. That's not going to give out the brightness of an LED light or torch that we use to illuminate the path perhaps half a mile ahead. It's going to give enough light only for the next few steps. To depend on a lamp like that takes trust. But even the flicker of a smallest flame can cast out darkness. If we live in God's presence day by day, we are not alone and we need not be afraid. So coming into land now. Those verses from Celtic Daily Prayer, Morning Prayer, are taken from Psalm 27, words spoken by King David. And they are incredible words, and even more so when you consider he was under attack when he wrote them. When thinking about what his one thing was, he could have said vindication. He could have said revenge. But his one thing isn't power or control. It's to dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord and to seek him in his temple. And the question that challenges each one of us, as it challenged me a month ago in my camper van, is what is our one thing? What is it that I prioritize over everything else in my life? What is the one thing I pursue first and foremost? What's the one thing I crave? The thing that dominates my thoughts and my dreams? What's the one thing I put first in my life? In short, does the Lord have the place in my life that he should have? Because the danger for us is that the Lord can be one thing among many in our lives. One thing, but not number one. And if we wish to carry the presence of God with us in our daily lives, if we want to be as confident as David was, that the Lord is our light, our salvation, our shelter, and our stronghold, then we need to be deliberate about focusing on spending time with him each day, reading and meditating on his word, spending time in prayer. John Ortberg's written a book called The Life You've Always Wanted, and in it there's a chapter all about this called The Undivided Heart. And in it he refers to a line from a film called City Slickers, I've not seen it, in which Jack Palance offers Billy Crystal some advice by saying, "The secret of life is pursuing one thing. The secret of life is pursuing one thing. He also refers to Soren Kierkegaard, who said, purity of heart is to will one thing. And he concludes his chapter like this. Words that bombard us all day long from billboards and tabloids and talk shows pull us in a thousand directions. But the word God speaks to us from his word can renew our minds. As he said to Augustine, so God says still, take it and read, take it and read. Let's pray.